it's another edition of Library Guys
and Gals
Go to the Movies. I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Library Gals Go to the Movies. Hello,
indeed.
Kate.
Hi.
Hi. We are having an early week brain today.
Yes.
So we can't guarantee where this is going to go, but we are all ready to celebrate Pride Month. Happy Pride.
Yay, it's Pride Month.
She told me we're in our little recording booth. And that makes us sound so much more professional than we are. We're out of a recording booth, the library, and she told me to set the mood. So I have rainbow strobe lights going on while we're recording this.
It definitely set the mood. I feel like I'm in a disco,
yes.
And I really love it.
It's perfect.
And in case anyone's ever wondering, the Delaware branch and the Orange branch have a soundproof audio booth with recording equipment that you can reserve for yourself, and you can launch your own podcast. So, yeah, come check it out. You can reserve these just like any study rooms.
It's really good. Don't we sound so pretty?
We sound so much more professional.
Yes, we do.
And you can make it like there's a disco in here.
So no matter what we actually say, it will always sound good. It's like when you hear English people talk.
Crisp and clean.
Yep. So, yeah, as we were talking about Happy Pride Month, we are doing a focus on movies that are representative of the LGBTQ+ community. And we're very excited. We've got two good ones for you that are on two completely different ends of the spectrum again, I feel like.
Yes.
Both with similar topics expressed in an entirely different way.
And very, very different types of movies and different watching experiences, for sure.
Yes. We've got one that's more on the serious drama end and one that's on a very campy comedy end.
Yes.
So try to guess what they are. And we'll go ahead and start going into our first one. I'll let you take it, Katie.
Yeah, I will. So the first movie that we watched, which at the time that I picked it, had been available through Canopy, which is no longer on Canopy, unfortunately, was My Beautiful Laundrette. The movie came out in the early 80s. It was directed by Stephen Frears, who went on to direct a lot of very British films. This movie, I think, is the big screen debut of Daniel Day-Lewis. And it follows a Pakistani family. A young man is gifted a laundrette, or basically it's a laundromat. You know, everything in British English sounds much fancier. So the laundrette is actually just a laundromat.
I didn't even think about that when I said that earlier.
Yes.
I was like, oh, that fit really well.
Totally did. So he is kind of gifted this rundown space, and he reconnects with Daniel Day-Lewis, who plays this kind of street thug in this neighborhood in England, and they rekindle a friendship that they'd had as young boys, and they develop their relationship from there. As the laundry is being replenished and rejuvenated, they make it actually a really beautiful spot.
Yeah.
It is a beautiful laundrette.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of this movie is about class struggles in England, the racism towards the Pakistani population throughout the neighborhood and really the whole country of England, and also the relationship between the two main characters, Omar and, what was Daniel Day-Lewis's
Johnny.
Name? Johnny. Omar
Johnny.
And Johnny. Oh, Johnny. And they really just had honestly, it was a kind of a sweet relationship. Like, they had their moments. They were really, experimenting is not the right word. They were learning about each other and reconnecting. And the way that their intimacy kind of comes together was really organic and
mm-hmm.
very sweet. And they were sweet with each other. And you could kind of see a little schoolboy playfulness in them. But also they were struggling with what kind of serious relationship they wanted with each other. And because it was the early 80s, it certainly wasn't a time that having a serious relationship was going to be an easy task for them. And Omar's family, they had nothing but trouble. So it wasn't like they were going to just start this relationship and it was going to be a perfect scenario for them. So all in all, I thought it was a really sweet movie. I mean, we were talking before we started recording that experience of watching the movie itself is a little bizarre. It's very much just a day-to-day slice of life thing where the edits are a little weird, they're a little bit sloppy, and they make some moments super dramatic that don't really need to be dramatic, but then there are some scenes that just seem to go on forever and ever. So, you know, I mean, it felt like an 80s movie to me.
Yep.
And the one thing that I thought was so weird in this movie that is kind of apropos of nothing was that they played this really weird bubble sound in the background a lot. Did you catch that?
Oh, yeah. That? Yes, I did. Yes.
So even in the very beginning of the movie, you just kind of heard these, like, bubbles popping. It was, like, an odd choice for, you know, it was kind of campy and cartoony in a place that
didn't
really belong.
That, yeah.
No, it didn't at all.
The only thing I can think of is, like, laundromat soap.
Yeah, like, and there was one washing machine that was bubbling over with soap a couple times. And, you know, there were some funny moments in the neighborhood that they were in, but also this was a pretty serious movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it took their relationship seriously, and it took all of their struggles very seriously as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, what did you think?
I will be honest, I didn't love the movie, mm-hmm. but I definitely enjoyed it, and I thought that it had some really good points to it. I did think the acting was very good. Daniel Day-Lewis was the standout. Even from, if this is his first role, it's incredible. Because, mm-hmm. yeah, like, from the get-go, he's incredible. And honestly, the movie didn't get super interesting to me until Johnny came into it.
Yeah.
And they started to explore their relationship. But, yeah, it has some really great moments. And it was not what I expected at all, what it was going to be from the name My Beautiful Laundrette. Mm-hmm. Like, it was much more gritty and unpolished than I expected it to be. But yeah, you're right. Like, the edits were very short and random and choppy, and they didn't flow very well. And that almost seemed, I couldn't tell if it was intentional or not, because it happened so much. I was like, well, maybe they're trying to do this for some reason. So, I mean, like, it was a little bit distracting, but, you know, once you get used to it, it didn't really take away from the story or anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely something that I've noticed in, like, other 70s and 80s movies before, like the quick choppy bits, and sometimes that works better for, like, the comedic movies or something. But yeah, I thought it was really good. I liked how it explored their relationship alongside of, like you said, you know, for the time period, that wasn't acceptable. But also there was the whole, you know, racist commentary about like all of the immigrants, especially like Indian immigrants and others coming in and not being welcome at all. And that's why Omar's family felt the need to just be business, get ahead, make deals with, you know, like Americans and Caucasian people, because, you know, if they can just get money and become the owners of things, they can get more respect there, mm-hmm. that they're not just getting for being humans. And so they had that alongside their relationship. And I thought that was one of, like, kind of the deepest points that the movie dug into. And the one thing that I never had answered, that I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be as big of a deal as it was to me, but mm-hmm. I always wondered, with the whole being friends as schoolboys, I always wondered if they had had a relationship secretly when they were younger or not, because it sort of felt like it played on that, mm-hmm. but they never outrightly said it.
Yeah, there's a moment kind of towards the end, because Omar's dad and Johnny start talking, and there had been marching in the streets against foreigners in the country, and Johnny, who they actually refer to as a fascist, was one of the ones marching in the streets against the family, and that, I think, was the moment that they stopped being friends.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell, like, the dad, he really did remember Johnny, and also remembered looking him in the eye and seeing him, like, protesting the very existence of their nationality in England in general. So, yeah, I wonder if there had been some previous intimate relationship between them. But, you know, they had moments of just being so sweet together when they weren't fighting or,
yeah.
you know, arguing about something.
Yeah, there were some moments where I was just like, I just felt like a little flutter in my heart. I was like, ooh.
Ooh.
So cute. Like, there was there's a scene where he just, like, he's at, like, the family's party or something, and there's the girl there that is, like, supposed to get with Omar,
mm-hmm.
and he just kind of, like, wipes under his eye, and it's like, oh, it's just an eyelash. But it's just like that little moment, and you're like, ooh,
you wanna touch him, you little flirt.
And then there's that. I think my favorite one is when Johnny hugs Omar when he's about to like leave with his like gang of friends, and he just like gives him a quick little lick on the neck. I was like, yes, like a hidden little. And, like, yeah, I feel like that was, like the ooh. Riskiest one, ooh. Like, right in front of his mates.
Mm-hmm. So. There's a moment right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it doesn't go super, I mean, obviously it deals with heavy issues. And, you know, in a way, the relationship kind of takes a backseat to some of their, you know, racial undertones. But, of course, that is a concern of theirs, you know, like, the way that we want to be together is going to be questioned. But also, we have this other element of our racial backgrounds being different. But then, you know, the way the movie ends kind of gives you positive feelings on how the relationship is going to go after the movie ends. So you have it ends on a very adorable moment. So
yeah,
I have faith in them.
Yeah, I was left really confused by the ending a little bit because, like, at a certain point, Omar, like in Omar and Johnny's kind of fighting with their relationship, Omar kind of gets in that mindset of like, I need to make money, I need to be a businessman, like in a big suit. And so he just kind of like pushes all of that relationship stuff aside and starts to be really rude to Johnny and starts to completely brush him off when Johnny's trying to like rekindle and trying to you know, have things be forgiven and, mm-hmm. and, you know, like make it like, you know, like work on things. And then that ending scene, like that happens much more near the end. So that ending scene, they do have their arguments, but then like it becomes tender again. And then the last shot of the movie has them just kind of like, you know, slice of life messing with each other, like really tenderly.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I was kind of like, he was just a jerk to you. Like, is it that easy? Like, is it going to be that easy? But it's a movie, you
yeah.
know? So, but yeah, I was just kind of like, wait a second.
Wait, maybe you need to talk about this a little more.
So,
get your needs met first.
Yeah.
Don't let him just come back into your life
yes.
this way.
So like, I think it was like more of a timing thing
yeah.
with the movie.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, take it with a grain of salt. It is the 80s. It is very British
yes.
and has a lot of class and other issues going on, but the relationship between Omar and Johnny is definitely worth checking out. I would say I still find it a positive relationship based on, you know, how they end up and how they act with each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I definitely think that it's worth a watch because it is like it pulled me in both directions so much because there were times and scenes where I really was getting into it and really loved it. And there are other ones that just like really kind of put me off from being interested.
Mm-hmm.
So I really just think it's based on the individual for watching it. But it is a really good movie to explore those kind of topics. You know, there's a lot of juxtaposition in the relationship and, you know, like the dealings of racism that they're dealing with. You know, there's things like the dad saying his son needs to get a job with his own people for protection. You know, one of Johnny's friends early in the movie tells him to, like, piss off to the jungle, you
mm-hmm.
know, and things like that. So they make some of the first moments of talking about like I feel like they lay it on really thick about him like getting a wife and getting married and like kissing women that he does business with, and they almost it was a weird, I don't know if it was because I knew that this was going to be a movie that fit in with LGBTQ plus type things
mm-hmm.
But or if it was just because the movie made it that way, but I found like those early moments when they were talking about it, or like when he would like be told to like, oh, like kiss like this girl that we are gonna set you up with or
mm-hmm.
whatever, like there was something about it that made it really uncomfortable and like grossed me out, and I'm like, I can't tell if it's like subliminally me just being like, I know he doesn't want that,
he doesn't want to kiss her,
or if there was something about the way that they set it up that worked really well. But yeah, I feel like early on you can tell
mm-hmm.
the undertones, like everything is very well acted, but the undertones really, really shine through. But yeah, I think that the actor who played Omar was really great. But yeah, Daniel Day-Lewis like
stole the show. Absolutely.
Yeah, so like I said, again, if that was his first acting role, then he knocked it out of the park. And his hair was very interesting. It's very like, I'm so all of the things that I've seen Daniel Day-Lewis in have been his older roles. like much older than in that. And so, yeah, I was not prepared for the bleachy punk anarchist hair that he has, but his face still looks the same.
It does. It absolutely does. And this is like an unfair comparison because the person I'm about to mention is a sad, paltry comparison to Daniel Day-Lewis, but he 100% has Vanilla Ice hair. His bleach
blonde,
two-tone high pompadour.
Oh, no.
And we'll say that actually Vanilla Ice has Daniel Day-Lewis hair because it looks incredible. And if you need a visual,
he came first.
That's what you got. He did.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing. Vanilla Ice steals everything.
It's exactly
he stole,
right.
He stole Under Pressure. He stole Daniel Day-Lewis's punk hair.
He just thinks Americans don't know anything about British people.
Yeah.
So he's just like, you don't know him. He's this British guy.
Well, and he stole like house flipping shows also.
He did. He totally did.
So, yeah. So that's our review of that. Obviously, our review on Vanilla Ice is not very favorable. our review of this movie is much more favorable than that. So,
absolutely.
Since it's not on Canopy, do you happen to know? Did you check if it was on anything else?
Ended up renting it from Amazon, and on Amazon Prime, it was $1.99 for rental.
Excellent.
Yep.
All right. Well, our next movie is going to take a complete flip of the drama, but not the actual drama drama. It has plenty of drama. I decided to choose But I'm a Cheerleader, which is a classic that I had never seen and I had always wanted to. I know, it's a sin. But yes, this is a movie that is from 2000, right on the cusp of the 2000s, and it was directed by Jamie Babbitt. It has you brought up all of the dates and like the directing things, and I feel like we don't always do that, so I had to look it up, and I'm like on the spot now.
I'm like, oh no, who is this?
Yeah.
When?
It has wonderful people in it, though. It has Natasha Lyonne, who you probably know from Orange Is the New Black. I love her. It has Clea DuVall, who is doing a lot of directing now. She did a lot of acting in the 90s and the early 2000s.
She was in
very cool.
The last few seasons of Veep too. If anyone watched Veep,
she's
great.
Very cool.
Yeah.
We also have Melanie Lynskey, who she's kind of like the actress that you always know her from something, but it's because she's in everything.
Mm-hmm.
She's wonderful. She's super hilarious. And we have RuPaul in this, who is the best role in this movie, I think. They're all so good, but yeah, definitely my favorite role, the one that made me laugh the most. But I'm a Cheerleader has a pretty simple plot line.
Mm-hmm.
It's a girl named Megan who's a cheerleader, and she has like a football player boyfriend, you know, all the typical things in high school. And one day she comes home and her parents and her friends sit her down and they're like, hey, you're gay. Like, we know you're definitely gay. And she's like, no, I'm not gay. I'm definitely not gay. And they don't believe her. And so they decide to send her to basically like a gay conversion
camp.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they send her to that, and shenanigans and what the camp is all about ensues, and the whole movie is just a big campy satire comedy.
Yeah.
None of it is taken seriously, and all of it is hilarious.
It's just great.
Yeah. It's wonderful. And not even 5 minutes into the movie, she's thinking about boobs.
Mm-hmm.
The first scene is like cheerleading practice and focusing on all of the cheerleaders jumping in the air and other things jumping around with them. And she's a couple minutes after that, she's kissing her boyfriend in the car, and it is the most awkwardly hilarious, gross, like slobbery, horrible kiss, and she's got her eyes open the whole time, like just making faces like and so yeah, clearly she's not enjoying it, like, and he's just getting so into it, and then she makes some excuse to not go to like the kissing spot or do more with him. So, and that's when she goes home and all of the intervention is set up. So yeah, I loved everything about this movie. I cannot believe it took me so long to watch this.
One of my favorite parts, so she goes home and they have an intervention and all of her cheerleading friends are there, and it takes her parents and a room full of people to convince her that these things that she's doing means she has to go away to this camp. So I wrote some of those down because
yes,
I thought they were
please.
Really funny.
The list of things that they create for like the stereotypes are some of the
so
best parts.
So good. And one of them is tofu.
Yes.
She eats tofu.
Yes.
All of her locker pinup pictures are all of women, mm-hmm. like girls in sports bras running around. So still relatively tame. And then they find a Melissa Etheridge poster in her bedroom. And they're like, you listen to Melissa Etheridge. You're a lesbian. And then the best, though, is when they find out how old she is. The woman who runs the camp says, thank God, we almost lost her to college.
So, hitting all of those great points. And I think, so here's the big reveal. So the, they've already got the camp transportation already set up. So as soon as this intervention happens, the camp director, I guess, pulls up, gets out of his car, walks up to the house, and it is RuPaul.
The one and only.
The one and only RuPaul, not in drag, in just RuPaul, bald, shaved head, and he is wearing a shirt that says straight is great, mm-hmm. and just seeing that zoom up of his shirt and his face, I just died. It's the funniest part to me. And he's also, he has like short shorts on.
Tiny shorts.
Yeah, showing off how great his legs look, and it's just the most wonderful visual comedy with him in it.
And it's funny because at the, like, RuPaul then is not RuPaul now, mm-hmm. but a lot of people kind of in the zeitgeist of the world in 2000 definitely knew who RuPaul was.
Yes.
So it was still a trip in 2000 as it is in 2021 to see RuPaul in, at the time, his, tight, straight is great t-shirt and tiny shorts. It was mm-hmm. a pretty excellent reveal.
Definitely. And, one thing that I loved about the movie is that it kind of gives headings, like it makes it in sections that are almost like a recovery program. Like the very first one is step one, admitting you're a homosexual. And so once that popped up on the screen, I was just like, I'm going to love this.
This is going to be great.
And, of course, some of the other people that are in this, too, is, they have the stereotypical, who are all the different types of people that are going to be, your co-campers. And, they always have the goth girl. Mm-hmm. In any ragtag group of people that are going to get in trouble at some point, there's a stereotypical goth girl, which I love. Also, Rufio is in this movie from Hook.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
And so is Sunshine from Remember the Titans. And also, so is Kerrigan, was her name, from Casper. If you don't remember who that is, it's like the blonde chick that comes in with Eric, Eric Idle?
Okay.
Is that who it is?
I haven't seen Casper.
What?
I haven't seen, I'm too old for that.
No, you're not. No one is too old for Casper. It has Christina Ricci.
I love her.
Yeah,
she's
so
great.
You gotta watch it.
All right,
it.
I'm gonna look it up.
All
Casper's
right,
next.
We're gonna review that just because she hasn't seen it now. But yeah, so there's a, for everybody else who, and their refined tastes of ghost movies, Kerrigan is one of the baddies that wants to, find all the money and inheritance or whatever in the Casper Mansion. I forget what his name is.
The Casper Mansion.
What's their last name?
The Casper House.
The Casper, the haunted house they live in. Yeah. So she's in that and she plays the girls' sort of camp counselor, a step below. RuPaul owns her. Mm-hmm. She mm-hmm. is paid by RuPaul. So yeah, there are a lot of fun people in there that you will recognize. And their houses, I don't remember the guy's house aesthetic actually, but the girl's house it stands out very much. Everything in their house is bright pink, and it looks like it's either covered in actual plastic or it's made out of plastic, like all those really popular blow-up furniture, mm-hmm. in the 90s. It's either made out of all that or it's just like plastic tarp.
I think it kind of looks like if you go to your grandma's house and she covered all of her furniture in plastic.
Yeah, so you wouldn't get
plastic,
your germs.
So you don't spill your Kool-Aid
so
on her nice sofa.
You won't get the gay.
Exactly. Don't get the gay off of this pink bed.
So, yeah, that's, the whole thing is just outrageous and super over the top. Like, when she finally, once they list those things, like the Melissa Etheridge and the yoga, or not yoga, the tofu and stuff, she just starts outrageously bawling and crying her eyes out really loud, and then just starts drooling from the mouth.
So much drooling.
So it's, it is doing everything as big and exaggerated as possible.
Super campy. Campy is the best way to describe it.
Yes, and it is beautiful. Let's see. Yeah, basically, once they get to the camp, the first kind of exercises they're doing to turn them all straight is the women are doing housewife chores, how to be a good housewife, mm-hmm. and the men are doing how to fix cars and chop wood and stuff. And it's just stereotypical, female and male set stuff that like, isn't going to do anything, which is super funny. They're all, like, dressed in like, 50s garb, the women, when they're, like, vacuuming and stuff and scrubbing the floors. And
I think they even introduced that part as, like, it's time to redefine your gender roles.
Yes.
Or, like, relive into your gender roles.
Yes. And then they have the big part of finding your root, which is basically just, like, finding the reason, like, the cause of your being gay.
The one thing that turned you
gay.
Yeah,
like, the one, it's, like, the one, it's like, therapy, like, the one trauma that caused all of this downfall. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of them are, like, you know, things that somebody could realistically say, you know, but then you've got ones where, I think it was the goth girl, she was like, I was born in France. And then you have one of the guys that's like, my mom got married in pants. So, yeah. And then there's a part where when one of the guys gets in trouble, he has to go, like, to wherever he's getting punishment. And they built, like, an actual human-sized doghouse that he has to go into.
Yes.
So that was pretty
solitary.
Funny.
Yeah.
Yes.
There are, especially during those scenes where they're going through the tasks and chores of how to live as their gender, supposed gender, there are so many sight gags, especially with the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all watching RuPaul change the oil in a car, and they're all just watching his trim legs underneath the car, and they're all like, you know, ooh, look at that. So it's pretty, I will say everything in this movie is camp. It's all camp. Like, this is not something to take seriously. It's a ton of fun.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And, of course, you know, it's the first thing of, like, yes, let's put all of the people that identify as gay or anything on the you know, spectrum of LGBTQ+, and let's put them all in one place to make them straight. And then they decide that you need to buddy up with somebody because, what is it? They say something along, I'm going to paraphrase, but heterosexual relationships are based on friendship. So, because homosexual ones definitely are not. There's no friendship in that. You have no friends. Yeah, you know, they get buddied up. And it's not even like, we're going to buddy you up with somebody from the guy's house or like somebody. It's, we're going to buddy up with somebody from your own house.
Right.
So you can know where this ends up. It ends up with lots of relationships forming
in
secret.
Lots of relationships.
Yeah. So, and one of those, and this actually gets more to the heart of the movie, it does actually have moments where it drops some of the comedy hugely and, you know, just focuses on some sweet moments. Megan, our cheerleading main character, starts falling for a character named Graham, who's played by Clea DuVall. And, you know, that just kind of slowly and naturally forms as well in the movie, like a little bit of trying not to fall for each other, of
mm-hmm.
course, because Megan goes into this camp kind of being like, yes, I am going to do this. I am a terrible person. And then, you know, like all that gets thrown out the window because she realizes there's no need to do that. And
mm-hmm.
so, yeah, you know, and they have like the goth girl has a crush on, is it Natasha Lyonne's character, right?
I think
Megan?
She starts off having a crush on Graham.
Okay.
And then, I don't, because I think that's how they kind of get together, because she's after Graham, but now I don't remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she does have a crush on one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right about Graham. But yeah, once she sees that they're together, she gets very jealous, you know, she kind of takes her revenge on that and rats them out and everything. That
mm-hmm.
comes later, but there is one night, you know, and that always, of course, gets broken up with a joke, but that relationship grows, and there's a place, and these characters come back, but one night they decide to sneak out to, like, a gay bar, and they have this couple take them there, and the guys call themselves, like, the Underground Homo Railroad.
Yes.
Which I think is great. And they're a wonderful couple. They come back later because, due to getting ratted out, they risk getting kicked out, and
mm-hmm.
Graham doesn't admit her feelings for Megan, so she gets to stay, and her parents come, and they think Megan's the entirely bad influence because Megan is truthful, and so Megan gets kicked out, and she ends up going to the house where these guys live, and they've also taken in, I can't remember any of the actors' actual names.
Yeah.
I just remember it's Rufio and Sunshine, but I think it's Rufio has been staying there. He was already kicked out for a previous, bad doing.
Mm-hmm.
He got caught also earlier in the film.
He was the other half of the kid who gets put into solitary because
yes,
they get caught messing around, and, you know, he ended up running away to the underground Homo Railroad to get saved.
Yeah, they do really take, like, even though things are very campy and they don't go too deep in it, they do take moments like that and really hit home with some quick things. Like, when the conversion camp takes everybody and makes them, like, throw rocks at that house, mm-hmm. and, like, several of them don't want to do it. There's also, one of my favorite moments is, it turns out that one of the, like, quote-unquote butch girls wasn't gay at all. She was straight, and just because of the way she chose to feel comfortable with how she looks, everybody in her life forced her to go there. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that I was like, it was incredibly heartbreaking, you know, and, you know, obviously she was very upset about that. And it just reveals some of those deeper stereotypes, you know, not only with that community, but just with everybody, you know, but especially that community. So, it really does hit home when it tries to, even while being funny, most of the time. So, there's also, the final test, is where you have to, simulate a sexual lifestyle. And there's another character the woman kind of camp counselor's son is, like, clearly stereotypically gay.
Right.
Like, that's what they're trying to drive home. And, you know, she's in denial about it, and he is too. Like, he's like, I'm a success story and blah, blah, blah. And so he's the person chosen to simulate the sexual lifestyle with all of the,
with,
like,
all
women,
of the women,
you know. And so that's just, you know, more comedy ensues. And, you know, eventually they have their graduation, which they all manage to get to, including Clea DuVall. And the Megan and the people at the house decide to do a rescue mission in the end and go like crash the graduation basically. And one thing that Graham always told Megan that she wanted to see, and not even as a joke to make fun of her, but she really wanted to see her cheerlead because she knows that she loves
it.
Yeah. And so that was a really sweet thing. So her plan first is just to go get her. So they sneak in, you know, they try to get both of Rufio's like lover partner.
I keep calling him Rufio.
I know, because I don't remember.
Andre. His name was Andre.
Andre, okay. I'm just going to call him Rufio.
Sure.
He is Rufio. But yeah, so he tries to get his boyfriend out, and that's a success. The guy leaves with him. And so they go, Megan goes to talk to Graham, and Graham says she can't do it. She can't leave. And it was at that point that Megan was like, oh, wow, you are choosing this. It's not like your parents' influence. Like, you're scared to do this. Like, you know, maybe don't even want to be with me. But she's like, I know that you do, though. Like, this isn't you. And so as kind of a last attempt, they're going to leave. They're going to leave her. And Megan decides she's going to do a little something special to show Graham how much she cares. And so she comes out with her little pom-poms and her cheerleading outfit, and she does a personalized cheer about Graham. Aww. And it is the cutest cheer.
It's so cute.
It's adorable. And that is the cute moment where Graham realizes that, you know, she doesn't need to hide and that she loves Megan and she doesn't want to be there and she doesn't care about the repercussions. And so she goes running off and escapes with Megan, and it's the cheering moment, and we're all very happy.
Yes. And I will say, just one thing to point out is that the camp, the conversion camp or household, is not overtly religious. There's not really many religious overtones to this movie at all. It is definitely more in the campy style. So if that's something that would bother you, just know that it's not any way based in.
They don't go there.
No, yep, they don't.
They try as much as they can just to make it, like, vague and cue all of the jokes.
Yes.
It's focusing on the stereotypes and, like, that situation. So,
yeah.
It doesn't get too deep into anything. There is a very cute, during the credits, after the credits scene, where a bunch of the parents of the campers are in, an LGBTQ+ acceptance group. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really cute
and funny
at the end. Like, the little cheery on the top.
Yes.
So, obviously, I feel like we really enjoyed this movie.
Absolutely.
I liked it better than Beautiful Laundrette. I mean, that was a very good movie, too. But this one, I found very enjoyable. So,
yeah.
And I like all the people in it so much. Like, I already did, so I'm probably a little biased, but...
It was just so fun, and it, like you said, nothing too heavy, you know, even though it's dealing with things that could have been heavy. It's just a campy silly, fun movie and also celebrates the LGBTQ plus community. And also, especially with the two older underground homo railroads, that they,
I love them.
That overall is, you know, that if this community isn't right for you, there's another one that is open and accepting of you, and they will find you.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
Yeah. And one of the, just to throw in, one of the other parts I loved about that movie is there is a moment where the couple in the Underground Railroad, they're like kind of like disagreeing while they're talking in front of them. And like the it's like a big height difference. Like you've got like a really tall guy and a really small guy. Mm-hmm. And the really tall guy is like, well, I just don't feel like I'm being heard right now. And the other guy's like, well, I feel like you're ignoring my feelings. And like, he's like, does my guy need a hug? And he's like, yeah, maybe. Yes. Like he just comes up. It's like just, it's like this really tender, funny moment. And I just, they're just the great characters. Like they definitely stand out. So but yeah, one of the things we talked about was how there are so many LGBTQ plus movies we could have chosen, but it was really important for us to choose ones that had more of a positive side. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the movies, and it's very important because this is like a big reality, but a lot of the movies, you know, can get so depressing if you watch too many of them because they focus so much on a lot of the trauma and the backlash and the things that people deal with in a negative way when going through coming out or dealing with those identities. And so we tried really hard to find ones that, you know, had uplifting parts, even if they did have some sad parts. So, of course, like, this comedy is excellent. And My Beautiful Lingerie, you know, even with the other undertones, you know, the kind of immigration thing, mm-hmm. is a much bigger kind of character trauma that they're going through than the relationship, you know, even though they're in hiding and they know that it's not approved of. It is kind of just for them. Mm-hmm. They make it for them, and they make that kind of their special kind of saving grace in all of the chaos that's going around with Omar's family and how they're getting pulled into it.
Yes.
So
yeah, definitely.
We really hope that you enjoyed both of them. If you watch them, we highly encourage that. And, you know, you can let us know if you have any suggestions for movies that you think we would like, or more positive, uplifting movies, more so that involve, you know, the LGBTQ plus representation in movies. We would always love to hear those. We've actually gotten a couple suggestions now that are not for these movies specifically. Mm-hmm. They're mostly, this is what I love too. Our recommendations so far have all been movies that are purposely terrible.
Yes.
Or at least people that recommended them know that they're considered terrible now. So our listeners know that we equally love so bad that are good movies. And you also want to hear that. And we realize that we have been doing some high quality movies.
We have.
And we need to get to the bottom of that barrel.
We need to get back to our roots, our actual roots of bad movies. So it's going to happen. We'll scrape the bottom of the hoopla barrel and find some cheese to bring to you.
I love cheese.
Soon. I do too.
So good.
So good.
What's your favorite type of cheese?
I really like the little teeny tiny brie bites that they have at Trader Joe's, because you can just snack on brie all day.
Brie is my favorite cheese also. Yeah. I always intend to eat it with crackers, and I buy the nice crackers and I buy the brie, and then I just end up like taking the knife and just eating the cheese.
Just eating a wheel of cheese.
Yeah. It's the crackers are just the vehicle.
I admire
for
that.
For the cheese. Thank
That's
you.
Really great.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Yeah.
So anyway, grab yourself your favorite kind of cheese and put on one of these movies tonight, and we will be back with you next week. Mm-hmm. Say if they have suggestions, what is our email for them to go to?
It is libraryguys@delawarelibrary.org.
And also, But I'm a Cheerleader, you can watch, I believe I watched it on Hulu, mm-hmm. So you can also get it from the library. We do have it through our library system. And yes, so send us a line, give us a suggestion, and we will be back with you next month for more hilarious, I don't know, good or bad movies.
Good or bad.
We will surprise you.
Sounds like we're looking for cheese.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye. Happy Pride Month.
Happy Pride.
Join us next time for Library Guys Go to the Movies. For more information on any of the films or digital services we've discussed, please visit DelawareLibrary.org.